This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.
Felcha, welcome to the Village Oak Tree. I'm your Sean K. Terrence O'Donnell. Thank you for joining me. As I said last week, and in keeping with my theme about talking about the things that matter most to regular people, I've found some news that articles that do have an impact on everyday life for most Americans. Today, I'm going to talk about the U.S. power grid, how it is set up across the country as far as private, public, or co-op, the frailty of it all, and what that might mean for the average consumer, depending on the state they live in. So gather around, sit you down somewhere comfortable for a bit, and let's talk about the electrical infrastructure of the U.S. Now, I'm not going to bore you with a bunch of statistics that will put you to sleep, but it's important to know what kind of state utility system is being offered for consumers across the country. For instance, Texas is all privatized, along with Maine and a lot of other states, but Nebraska has publicly owned utilities run by the state. There aren't very many public utility companies, but they account for about 15% of the utilities in the U.S. right now. On the other hand, privately owned utilities make up the bulk across the country at about 72%, with co-ops coming in last. These differences determine the price of the consumer electric bills in these states. Privately owned utilities tend to be more expensive for consumers as they are profit motivated for their shareholders and investors. I remember when I lived in Texas for 5 years, the competition between utility providers was intense. It was even worse when I put solar panels on my roof and I had to call around to find a company that would offer me a deal to sell my excess electricity to the grid and then let me buy it back when I needed it for a fair price. Which brings me to one of the reasons I want to talk about this a wee bit. Last week, I found an article in Mother Jones about how Trump's new rollback of support for green energy and renewables is causing some New England states to look towards Eastern Canada for wind-powered electricity. Canada's all about renewable energy, and they have no issues about selling it to the Americans, unless we keep calling them the 51st state. Now, that may change. But there is the Trump issue. These New England states are caught between a rock and a hard place because the Trump administration has stopped supporting the renewable energy projects, most certainly not buying green energy from the Canadians. Then there is the issue of the private utility companies. In Maine, for example, there are two primary private providers. Both are foreign-owned and control prices with an iron hand. Maine tried to convince voters to go public in 2023, but the state government lost the argument for the change because the state would have had to buy all the privately owned utility infrastructure and keep it maintained. The voters were convinced by a massive ad campaign that their prices would go up compared to the private corporation's current model. Corporations lied, of course, as they have never lived up to their promises to maintain their infrastructure across that state, especially in the very rural areas. I know this because I lived in one of those very rural border counties in Maine for 10 years from 2005 to 2015, and there were always power outages due to failed equipment. Imagine the scenario that's playing out across all the United States right now. Private utility corporations only doing the minimum to keep the infrastructure up to maximize profits. A perfect example of that is Texas. I lived there from 2015 to 2020, and I watched utility companies fight each other over market share, a lack of maintenance, and always complaining to the public about how they couldn't afford to upgrade the infrastructure to keep a stable supply of electricity to people's homes. Yet they went full tilt on spending money when Amazon decided to build a mega structure in the little town I was living in just north of Austin back in 2019. All of a sudden, there were massive upgrades being done to the major power distribution lines and towers and everything, and all new construction going on all around the new facility. This is how the private utility companies take care of their customers. Money talks the loudest. It also talks the least because the public utilities have the opposite problems. They usually don't have a lot of money to invest in infrastructure upgrades without raising the consumer prices so high that no one can afford them. Co-ops are even worse, which is why they're not very popular. It's one of the biggest reasons why Biden's bill to spend federal money on green energy and renewable energy projects was so important to the well-being of rural Americans. But the MAGA Republicans and a couple of idiot Democrats decided to go with their corporate donors from the fossil fuel industry and private utility companies to quash it. Back in February of 2021, Texas experienced a freak weather event that brought 2 feet of snow and near sub-zero temps to Texas. It shut down the power grid for most of the state for a week, and Texas is a very big state, which allowed water pipes everywhere to freeze and burst, which caused flooding and deaths. Billions of dollars in damage was caused because of these private utility companies not keeping their distribution infrastructure up to par. The only thing that saved them from going completely dark was the windmills and solar farms, but it wasn't enough of that to keep the lights on. Obviously, there was a big investigation, and the state government was forced to hold the private utility companies to account for the disaster. Texas, up until this year, had been investing a lot more in renewable energy sources since then, but now, probably not. That's like slamming the gate on the corral after all the cattle and horses have escaped, to use a Texas metaphor. Imagine this taking place on a regular basis across the country, especially now with more freak weather events happening everywhere across the country. I remember when I lived in Caribou, Maine for those 10 years, I can remember several times during the winter months when heavy snows or severe sub-zero temps were going on, and that an old transformer or utility pole will go out nearby, and I would lose power for a day or two, so sometimes two or more days at a time, while they rounded up parts and made the repairs in these very adverse weather conditions. I had a wood-burning furnace in the basement back then that would still keep the house warm enough to avoid any pipes freezing up, even though I didn't have any electricity. It would keep the basement warm, which the warm air would come up through the floor in the house and keep the rest of the house from freezing pipes. This kind of stuff happens all the time around the country nowadays. I'm not talking about the hurricanes and the huge tornadoes that rip through rural communities. We all know that they always knock out the power grid. What I'm talking about is the somewhat normal weather that knocks out local sections of the power grids, such as I mentioned when I lived in Caribou. Things like old power poles that get knocked over by snow and ice storms, old transformers blowing up when the sub-zero weather gets to them, wires between utility poles that are given out all across rural areas of the country these days, more and more. These things happen all the time, but normal weather events taking down parts of the power grid only happen when utility companies don't spend any money on replacing old and out-of-date equipment. With privately owned utility companies only worrying about their profit margins, a lot of people suffer from rolling brownouts and outright blackouts that shouldn't be. For supposedly the richest country in the world, why is the U.S. living with second and third world power grids in the rural areas of the country, while data centers are going up everywhere, sucking up all the electricity from the local communities? We all know the answer to that question: money. This is the biggest reason why a vast majority of Americans are so angry. They're watching the wealth gap become wider and deeper every month. That's why a lot of them voted for Trump, and a lot of them didn't vote at all. They're fed up with the wealthy elites taking all their hard-earned tax money and spending it on forever wars overseas, on tax breaks for the wealthiest, and so on, while their little towns turn into ghost towns due to lack of tax money. People have been leaving their small rural towns for decades over global warming, corporations forcing local business to close, jobs disappearing, and so on. Corporate farming industry has been buying up all the farmland they can to grow for-profit crops to sell overseas for years that does nothing to feed the American people, which, by the way, is also starting to unravel due to Trump's tariffs. The rural people have been watching their local stores go under, saying goodbye to the young people who leave for greener pastures, dealing with the cost of living steadily going up with income stagnant or decreasing, and they're becoming scared of food insecurity. With the MAGA Republicans passing this latest big, beautiful bill, they call it, more and more people are going to start suffering from food insecurity very soon. People from all walks of life, poor kids who will no longer have school breakfasts and lunch, No more Meals on Wheels for shut-in seniors. Grocery stores will have less to offer as food products become unavailable or become too costly for the average consumer. Even if the Democrats should turn around the majorities in the Senate and the House in 2026, it will likely be too late to save the economy of the United States. Trump and his people will have gutted the federal budget and funneled the money over to themselves and their corporate donors. The only possible thing that might save the American people right now is if Trump becomes incapacitated somehow within the next few months, whether it's from some medical malady or if this whole Epstein thing blows the lid off all of his malfeasance and cover-ups or something else. If the Democrats and enough Republicans finally decide that it's time for Trump to go in order to save what's left of the country, they will. But again, it'll probably be too late to save the economy by then. Besides, Trump will never go quietly. You know he'll do a scorched earth on his way out and leave everything the worse for his being there. Between corporate greed, politicians fighting to become the feudal class nobility in certain states and in Washington, D.C., along with the wannabe dictator who wants to be top dog, the country is coming apart at the seams. There will be more empty farm fields across the country as farms go bankrupt without overseas customers, which will cause more people to come homeless and hungry. I watch a couple of YouTube podcasters every day whose focus is on economics around the world, with a focus on the U.S. They're predicting the fall of the U.S. in an economic sense. Trump's tariffs, or lack thereof, because of his waffling, is starting to make other countries around the world stop trading with the Americans. They're finding safer, more stable markets for their exports, which makes Trump madder, so he announces more tariffs and so on. This will have a longer-term effect on the U.S. economy, even after Trump's gone. He's ruined the trust factor between nations, and it will take a huge lift to ever get that back, if the United States ever does. I watched a news segment about Canada from CNBC last weekend, and Canada is a good example of what I mean. Canadian consumers are boycotting as much U.S. imports as they possibly can, and they're probably not ever going to go back to the way things were before Trump. The EU is starting to do the same now. China is in a whole different category, but they're largely moving on without the United States after all the tariff crap. But they can afford to. A lot of smaller countries are not so fortunate. Divesting from the American consumer markets will tank their economies in the short term, and they're very worried. They're starting to move on with the help of China, but even China has a few rough edges to work out before everyone jumps on that train completely. This is why the BRICS bloc is becoming so important these days. By coming together and offering better trade deals to the world, these smaller countries now can make other choices without going under, and they are. The U.S. economy has been slowing down for the last few years. Some people are pointing fingers at the first Trump term, but I think it goes farther back than that. The U.S. shot itself in the foot with the NAFTA trade deals made in the late 1980s and early 1990s. Then it was George W. Bush's forever wars in the Middle East that further started bankrupting the country, Bush's recession because of all the wars, and Obama's corporate bank bailouts in 2008, and it's been downhill ever since. Even though I said I wanted to talk about the utility companies around the United States ripping off their customers, they're just a symptom of a very economically sick country overall. Private corporations are gutting the U.S. economy any way they can. It's only the average consumers who will suffer from it. The poorest of them will suffer the most, and as in any capitalist economic model, or should I say feudal economic model. Because make no mistake about it, the United States is devolving into an old-time feudal society, with the nobles stripping the wealth out of the land and the people under them in the social strata. European countries never really left that model behind, despite what they say about themselves being democracies. Not that other countries in places like Africa, Central and South America are that much better. There are no perfect societies anywhere yet, though some think the Scandinavian model is the best so far. I reserve judgment as they also have problems, but they seem to have less than most. It's sad to see the United States heading down that road, following the Europeans. The U.S. always told the world that they were better than that, that the United States was a welcoming place for the refugees and asylum seekers of the world. Those of us who have traveled the world for other than the occasional European vacation know better. For most Americans who have never traveled outside the country's borders, They only know what the U.S. media tells them. This is another reason why the people are so divided and have been since the first European colonists started arriving to the New World. The wealthy, titled English nobility back then knew that by sowing discord amongst the poor colonists against those who were arriving from places other than England, this would help them control the masses and keep them into political power structures. That strategy has worked for them for centuries, so why should they change anything now? The only difference in the U.S., we call the nobility presidents, senators, representatives, and CEOs instead of kings, princes, dukes, and barons. The difference in politics in 2016 and 2025 is that Trump isn't satisfied with the status quo. He's impatient. He wants what he wants when he wants it. And that's usually right now when he thinks about it. That's like just like any other spoiled rich kid who grew up without any parents teaching him what no means. With the people in the U.S. already being shackled by debt, whether it's corporate banking-induced personal debt, credit cards, or the national debt, they want to change for the better. They aren't smart enough to collectively to know how that should come about. All the largest majority of them know is that their elected representatives are supposed to be taking care of that for them, and they're not. And they're mad as hell. I mentioned on someone's blog article last week about a report I read a while back, which said that the average education level in the United States right now is equivalent to a sixth grade reading and math level in the poorest urban and rural areas of the country. Now pay attention to what I just said. I used the word average. There are some very
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.
Smart people out there in the rural towns across America that are trapped by economic circumstances and are unable to show the world how smart they are. Some of them are outright geniuses, but come from poor families that can't afford to help them leave home for a better life. They live frustrated lives on family farms or follow their parents into whatever local industry is employing them most of the town they live in. Obviously, there are a lot of very smart people in the U.S., but there are more and more people who can barely read and do simple math. This despite having at least a high school diploma. That's a hit against the state of a lot of the public school systems across the country, especially those states with a largely agrarian rural population. If these states had more money to fund their public schools, this statistic would change for the better dramatically. The same could be said for the inner city public school systems. The same upward mobility issues plagued them as well. There are some very smart kids who never make it out of the hoods and barrios of America because of economics. It all goes back to the overall state of the economy. The United States is rotting from the inside. Their utility infrastructure is failing all across the country due to a lack of money being spent in needed maintenance and upgrades. This applies to both the electrical grid, clean potable water, and sewage treatment plants, and so on. Especially when these utilities are owned by corporations, sometimes foreign-owned, that have little vested interest in spending money to keep the lights on and the water flowing to people's houses. They're more interested in securing a billion-dollar account for a new data center that needs massive megawatts of electricity and tons of water to keep the servers cool. I have a video from YouTube by an independent news company that reports about how a private power company in Montana is building a new power plant in an urban setting to help take care of their corporate customers at the expense of the local residents. The air pollution is one aspect that these new plants are generating, as a lot of them run off natural gas these days, or coal, since Trump pushed the coal plants back into operation. But we're missing the point, and that's why I'm talking about it here. You can build all the shiny new power plants you want, but if you don't spend any money on the power poles and lines going out, plus the other related infrastructure, all that's for naught. On the other hand, if all you, as a privately owned power plant, are concerned with is supplying electricity to your corporate customers, then you'll spend money on infrastructure going to the corporate customers, conveniently forget about your residential customers, which is what is happening all across the United States. There have been multiple reports made since 9/11 about the state of the U.S. power grid, all in the name of national security. Almost all of them point out to the infrastructure vulnerabilities everywhere. If we put aside the scenarios of terrorists blowing up power stations and transfer points, we can step back and realize that the United States doesn't need to worry so much about foreign or domestic terrorists sabotaging the power grids. All any foreign adversaries need to do is wait. The overall power infrastructure in the U.S. is just one extreme weather disaster away from a major power outage that could knock the power out across multiple states. This happened once before in the Northeast years ago, and it could happen very easily again anywhere in the country. In my recent travels out west, I observed this in person. I saw how low the man-made lakes in northern Arizona and southeastern Utah are. These power plants are all hydropower, and there are many more just like them around the country. When the water runs out, the power plants will shut down, and Trump doesn't want to build any more windmills or solar farms. Don't get me wrong. There are a lot of windmills and solar farms all across the Plain States and the Western Prairies, but there's nowhere near enough to handle America's needs. Take a look at the power poles in your neighborhood or rural town where you live in the U.S. What condition are they in? How about the power plants? Are they powered by coal or natural gas? Is the air quality around these plants really bad? Does your community experience frequent power outages, especially during the stormy weather? I'm not talking about extreme weather, but seemingly normal weather. Just a big thunderstorm. Are you paying high utility rates, not seeing any infrastructure maintenance or upgrades where you live? Take a walk in your neighborhood or go for a drive around your county and take a look around. What do you see? Does the electrical grid and potable water system look like it's on its last legs? There are some places in the United States that are still using lead pipes underground to bring potable water to people's houses here in 2025. How is that a hallmark of a rich country? I'll leave you with one more personal observation. I live in a subdivision that has large power distribution towers running through it all. All these towers are all rusted and looking pretty raggedy. If I drive out to the rural areas of my state, the wooden power poles are a mix of new but mostly old poles that look like they're ready to fall over. In all the states I recently traveled through, from Virginia to California and back, I observed the same thing everywhere, unless it was in a place that was popular, such as the national parks. But that also goes back to what I've been saying about these new data centers. The utility companies will be more than happy to take care of their wealthy corporate clients at the expense of their residential customers, because that's where the money is. They're the shiny new things that these tech corporations are willing to shell out billions of dollars for, and the private utility companies are falling all over themselves to get a piece of that pie, all the while neglecting their duties to their residential customers. Then when the grid fails, they cry to the governments for emergency funding to get things back online again. Although with Trump gutting FEMA, they probably won't get any more emergency money in the future. As a former service technician, I know full well the value of keeping up with normal maintenance that's required for all kinds of systems and what happens when you don't do the maintenance. You end up spending more money when all you do is react to outages caused by weather and normal wear and tear that could have been reduced by spending a little money to keep up the routine maintenance and upgrades. As we head through the hot summer days ahead and the air conditioners run more and more to keep us from suffering from heat exhaustion, take a look around you. Think about what you might stand to lose if you were to suffer from a major power outage for days at a time, not caused by an extreme weather event. Ask yourself, what is your utility payment actually paying for? It certainly isn't strong wooden power poles, or wires, or huge towers that bring electricity to the communities we live in, unless you live near a new data center or an Amazon warehouse. As always, I try to give you something to think about every week. Stay tuned as I go on my break and return with another chapter of The Priest by Michael Campy. I want to take a couple of minutes to explain how you can support what I'm doing here, either through a direct donation, a subscription, or purchasing my book. First, let me say I don't monetize my work up front, but I'm not adverse to asking for donations of any amount or currency on my website for paid subscriptions to my Substack page if you have the ability to do so. My annual or monthly subscription rates are as low as Substack will allow, if that helps. If nothing else, like, follow, restack, or sign up for a free subscription and share with anyone you wish to add my voice to the many in the independent media who don't like what's happening to people around the world. I may not be able to join any street protests, but I can surely protest here. I appreciate everyone who tunes in to watch, listen, or read my thoughts about how all of this is affecting us. I realize that I'm just one voice among the many, but that's how a rebellion gets its start. We start by raising our collective voices to be heard loud and clear by those who would attempt to take away our rights and freedoms. Americans had one rebellion in the 1770s to stop a tyrant, but we can always start another one. In Ireland, they've had many a rebellion through the centuries to stop the tyrant kings of the past, so my ancestors have a lot of experience with that. Let me finish up by showing you this little video about my dystopian fiction story I wrote, Fugitives in the United States. If this story sounds interesting, go to any major book retailer around the world to order it, or order a hardcover or paperback version on my website and read it for yourself. The way things are starting to go in the U.S., the story may not be fiction for much longer. Watch this video and decide for yourself if you think this story is starting to become a reality now.
James had one dream: to save lives. But in a country torn apart by hate and fear, his own life became the ultimate battle. A new government driven by prejudice. A system that left no room for those like him, immigrant, Muslim, and brown skin. Forced to abandon his life and live as a fugitive, he fought to survive in a country that saw him as an enemy. Every step brought new risks and unexpected alliances. But in the darkest moments, love found him. And together, they discovered that even in a state of despair, hope could still bloom. This is the story of one man's fight for freedom, survival, and love.
Welcome back. So let me bring up Michael's latest chapter here. And as always, we'll read it together as much as we can here. All right, so let me cruise over here. And this is chapter 38, The Priest, formerly known as Bob, by Michael Campy. Rolling on the river. Maybe it's not a river. I'm not sure what it is or if I'm rolling. It feels like I'm rolling. I remember rolling like this when I was a kid in a wagon or something. I don't remember it hurting this much. And I don't know if the hurt is real or part of something else. There's a long, gently curved downhill path that looks perfect. I'm on a flexi flyer. If you don't know what that is, it's kind of like a sled with wheels and little handles that you use to steer. And what I found out too late, we're woefully inadequate brakes. I'm still rolling, rolling, rolling. Maybe I'm a kid again and rolling down a long grassy hill with my arms stretched out over my head, laughing uncontrollably. I'm not a kid. I'm not sure who I am right now, but I'm rolling. Each turn hurts worse than the last turn, and I'm thinking that it may never end. I wonder if this is what the journey to the afterlife, such as it is, feels like, just rolling, 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 and then it stops. I'm encountered an obstacle. I don't want it to stop, but I'm not really in charge. There's people here, the sound of their feet moving toward me. I hope it's not the same people as before. Someone is crouching next to me with a knife, and I'm afraid that I might die, which wouldn't be altogether bad because then it would stop hurting so much. The restraints on my feet and hands are loose. Maybe that's what the knife is for. Someone is holding my head and crying. It sounds like a little kid, and someone is gently probing my body. I open the eye that isn't swollen shut, and there's a man in a dress hovering over me, and I scream. But the sound comes out all gurgling-like, and the man tells me it's okay. I don't believe him, and I gurgle, scream again, and there is someone with a bottle of water, and they're trying to get me to drink. My first sip comes right back up, and someone tells me to take it slow. Things are getting less foggy. My good eye clears up, and I can see them around me, and it takes a second before I realize that I know them, and they don't want to hurt me. Little kid says, "It's okay. We're not going to eat you." I look at him and say, "That's good." He smiles when he hears my voice. The man in the dress asks, "What happened to you?" It's Dolly, and I remember now. Rock, head, bathroom, bad people, hurts, Kurtz, dangerous. Dolly smiles. Whatever happened didn't make you any more cohesive. I didn't hear the last part because I fell asleep. I'm not sure how long I was out, but when I woke up, there was a smell of some type of food product being heated up, and I asked for some. Tiki came over and helped me sit up and held a plate while he spooned some soft, gooey dog food tasting stuff into my mouth. You see, he said, "We have food, so we don't need to eat you." Dolly came over and sat next to me. "You don't look so good." I had some trouble. "No shit," he said. "Where'd you go?" I hung back to go to the bathroom, and just as I settled in, I got hit in the head with a rock, I think. And then I was tied up and dragged somewhere. Then I met this Kurtz guy, who I think is the supreme leader. He talked to me for a while, actually seemed nice enough. And then he nodded at the men who were with him, and they started beating me. And the next thing I knew, I was here. He told me he wanted to send a message. When I asked him what the message was, he said, "Not what, but who." And then they started on me. "So you're the message?" "Yes." "Do I mean anything to you?" "It's the same message we sent them when we killed their guy. They're trying to scare us, introducing fear, perhaps to see if we'll give up or something." Kurt said that it was them that did the killing in Ash Fork. "That was a pretty fucked up scene," said Dolly. "What should we do?" asked Duffy, who had come closer to hear what was going on. Pork came over and said, "It's only a matter of time before they get tired of this game." "It's not much of a game," I said. "It's all a game to them. Pretending is a defense mechanism, at least for the ones I interact with. The only problem for us is that they don't like to lose. What happens when they get tired of the game? They take all the pieces off the board, and then they go looking for a new game." "Take all the pieces off the board?" Dolly stepped over. "She means kill us." So that's all I have here this week. I appreciate everyone tuning in. Gorma Haggit, thank you for listening. And I hope you watch or listen to the show today. I hope you enjoyed it. You'll return again to listen to the news and stories I find. As I say goodbye this week, at least I want to leave you with this rebel quote. "Freedom is not a gift to be given, but a right to be fought for." It's long ago foil.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.